This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run with Philip C and I'm Wong Xiaoning. 7:17, Monday the 29th of August, and in about 30 minutes, we'll be speaking to Ibrahim Sufyan of Merdeka Centre on what went down over the weekend, especially since now budget is going to be held on October
7th. Very early.
As opposed to October 28th, which was the original date. But in the meantime, let's talk about the COVID-19 developments, because last week, the World Health Organization announced that we have reached a tragic milestone of 1 million COVID-19 deaths for 2022. Meanwhile, in Malaysia, the daily number of confirmed COVID-19 cases continues to hover around the 3,000 mark, while sadly more than 36,000 people have lost their lives to this pandemic so far.
Very sobering statistics. As for booster doses, Malaysia is seeing a low take-up rate, with just under 50% of total population having just taken their first booster shot, and around just only 5% of those eligible having received their second booster. And while COVID-19 is still here to stay, for the first time in more than 2 years, people in Singapore will no longer be required to wear masks indoors, except on public transport and in high-risk settings like healthcare facilities. So is Malaysia ready to drop indoor mask mandates as well? And has the world become numb to the toll of the pandemic on individuals, families and communities?
For some answers, we speak to Dr. Koo Yung Kian. He's a scientific officer at Duke NUS Center for Outbreak Preparedness. Good morning, Dr. Koo. Always good to speak to you. Now, from today onwards, Singapore won't be requiring masks to be worn in almost all public indoor spaces. Help us understand what's the rationale behind this decision, and is this the right time?
Hi everyone, good morning and nice to be here again. Thanks for having me. I think it's certainly going to be interesting when I go to work later when I don't have to wear a mask in my office. But I think there are certain signals and conditions here in Singapore that has allowed the government to make this decision. Things like low hospital admissions and deaths with a very high vaccination rate do certainly help, as it shows the healthcare system can cope for now. But decisions like this have to come with accurate information as well. I don't think it's wise to say that it's no longer required, but rather the messaging or the language should be optional. Like pre-pandemic, masks are optional for any respiratory viruses. So saying it's not needed probably downplays or even negates the usefulness of masks, which we know that would be wrong. They're still very useful to stop disease transmission for COVID and for other diseases. So I think by saying it's optional, we then empower the community or ourselves to decide based on our own risk profile and what type of activity we are going to do indoors, or what type of situation or environment is the place going to be and who are we interacting with. And so hopefully with all these considerations, the public can make probably a better informed decision.
Do you think Malaysia should do so as well, ease its mask mandate? Do you think Malaysia has the same signals and conditions, or at least the accurate information to make the decision to whether they should ease mask mandates?
I think overall, the situation in Malaysia is not far off. We do have a relatively high vaccination rate, especially for the first and second primary series. But probably, like you said, the boosters number should be higher. Hopefully, with increased messaging around the booster, more people will have it taken. I also would like to see increased access to testing. I think even though our test kits are still quite affordable, but I think we should have a system to have free kits distributed directly to households to continue the momentum of self-testing, as well as enforcement or emphasis in ventilation, etc.
Yeah, in Malaysia, booster take-up rate has been rather poor, 50% for first booster and 5% for second booster. How do we get more Malaysians to take it up? Because then only perhaps should we be able to consider removing the mask mandate, right?
Yeah, I think it's a strange position to be at. I think initially we actually emphasised a lot on boosters and vaccination, and then we got a relatively high uptake, and somehow it has turned on to us, you know, and now people seem to forget a little bit there's a vaccine. I think because, the travel opening up, the economy opening up, people are mingling, the rate of infection has gotten higher. Most of people around has gotten COVID, and because of the vaccine being so effective that most people only have mild to maybe moderate disease, I think we dropped the ball a little. So I think the communication around vaccination has to be very persistent. It has to be consistent all throughout the year. Trying to improve awareness and also to increase access to testing.
And if we take a step back, right, if we look at the announcement by WHO that 1 million people have died of COVID-19 in this year alone, 2022, it's quite clear from my view that we haven't really learned the lessons of the past 2 years in the pandemic, right?
No, I think there are many lessons, like you said, many lessons to be learned. And, you know, there are many things that can be done to address this this health inequity gap. But I think the gap has always been hard to close, and COVID has certainly magnified this like many other things. Global health is always fraught with geopolitics, personal interests, cultural differences, etc. And all these continue to be barriers to closing a gap. I mean, and you know, a lot of high-income countries are just basically trying to donate their way through the pandemic. But, you know, donations are not really sustainable. They do not provide long, sustainable mechanisms to close this health inequity. So I think these are rather deep and systemic issues that unfortunately can't be changed overnight. We probably need more structural changes on how we operate on a global level.
Okay, and going back to this requirement of taking vaccinations or booster shots, you know, a lot of it has been government-driven. But if we really need to transition to endemicity, then it's pretty much a question of our own initiative, right? How do we get everyone, be it Malaysians or Singaporeans, to take some control over flattening the pandemic curve? How do you change that mindset?
I think, first of all, it's a little bit unfortunate that the conversation around responsibility has fallen into a similar dichotomy, you know, like our lockdown argument lie versus like, lucky or not, I think both the government and the community, and of course, personally, we all need to play a part. So while there needs to be community or personal responsibility, authorities also has to facilitate this new way of living. I think so, you know, improving processes around how we live, testing and treatment, vaccines, the ventilation offices, and of course, flexibility in workspaces and arrangement. These are very important conditions that the government can try to influence so that, you know, when the processes and the environment is it facilitates this change in mindset, I think eventually the people will also change.
I want to get your view about vaccines for children under 5 years old. You know, Malaysia hasn't announced anything yet, but Singapore plans to roll it out end of the year. What does the science tell us about this?
I think the science is good. You know, the evidence that we see from vaccinating children less than 5 years old shows that there's good benefit, very little risk. I think incidences of pericarditis actually almost unheard of. Like the 5 to 11 year olds, they tolerate the lower dosages very well, have very good protection. But, you know, with the children, you know, as we go lower into the age group, the risk threshold is always lower. Usually it's a little bit harder to get this segment of population into clinical trials as well. But I think I definitely support vaccinating them. They are probably the last of our population to be vaccinated. Low risk is, of course, not no risk. And we travel, opening up, schools are in full swing. The circulation of virus will be high again. So I think it's only logical that we continue to push for vaccination at this age group.
And staying on the topic of booster jabs, right? The second booster shot is now only recommended for individuals aged 60 and above, as well as to high-risk individuals aged 18 to 59. Should we do away with all these recommendations and just allow it to be available for everyone?
I think that's certainly one option that we can take. But we also need to see how good the protection from these vaccines are offering. There will come a point to decide whether the first generation COVID vaccines will offer similar strong benefits as compared to last year versus the risks of or the adverse effects. We know now that the circulating variants have changed quite a bit. No doubt the vaccines will still give good protection, but I think we should seriously consider looking at getting Omicron specific vaccines. I think the US and the Europe has already approved this recently. Similar to how influenza vaccines are recommended every year. So for the moment, I think there's no great harm to offer the second booster to younger adult population, but the benefit might not be as great as compared to previous years.
Okay, but Dr. Koo, you know, I hear this among some of my friends, and they're very hesitant about taking the booster shot and accepting that maybe perhaps we will have to take these shots regularly, annually for the rest of our lives. How do we overcome this mindset if really that's what's required from a scientific perspective to actually avoid catching COVID-19 or at least reducing the symptoms when we do catch it?
Well, I think it's also persistent communication around how we understand the disease. Now, I think initially, early in the pandemic, when we first developed the vaccine, a lot of hope. And, you know, we tried to position the vaccine as a one shot to cure all. But unfortunately, as we learn more, this is not the case. And I think we should reconfigure how we communicate this to the public. The vaccine is still very effective, and with changes in the disease and etc., then we have to really just communicate this specifically to the public so that they understand how the disease is. So,
all right, thank you for your time. That was Dr. Koo Yung Tian, scientific officer at Duke NUS Center for Outbreak Preparedness. Basically, boiling it, distilling that it's communication, right, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the communication has to shift, because I think it's what you were saying, right? Earlier, the expectation was that it was that one shot that will cure it all. Mm-hmm. But now I think it's about the reality. It's like, look, it's going to help you reduce symptoms and actually reduce the severity when you do get COVID.
Yeah, and you know, you're just going to have to take it year in, year out, because COVID-19 is pretty much here to stay. There's no running away from it, right? And only if we are responsible as a society, we take it upon ourselves, maybe then we can consider perhaps a maskless future. But up next, we'll be speaking to Toby Isles, head of Middle East and Africa Sovereigns at Fitch Ratings, on Saudi Arabia's new economy. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.